each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Good afternoon. This is Loretta Frelick, and I am guest host on listener-supported Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland and WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI. It's my delight to be here today. My partner, Mary Fiorito, the Cardinal Francis George Fellow in Public of Ethics and Public Policy in Washington, D.C., and the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at Notre Dame's DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture, has the day off today. And so Nick and I are flying solo. So I just want to welcome everyone. I hope we all had a great weekend. I know I was able to get in my very last beach day, I'm pretty sure, as we begin fall this week. But it was a glorious Sunday, wasn't it? We also today have two amazing guests. And our second guest will be Congressman Dan Lipinski, who is the recipient of the Presidium Vitae Award at the Aid for Women annual dinner on September 29th. But first, we want to welcome to the program Karen Kerbis. Karen, are you with us?
Hello, Loretta. Well, hello, everybody.
Hi, we're so glad that you can be here. And you just have the most fascinating story in your life to share. And I really am excited that you were able to make time on this very busy day. A documentary comes out on you and what you've done.
Yes, it's wild. But I have to say that, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And thank you to your listeners for you know, joining in. And this is probably the first and last time in my life I will get to cut in front of a congressman. So I'm very excited that happened, because that's the story I'll be telling, is that I got to go ahead of a congressman. So he may have the fancy office and all the perks, but I got to go first.
So. Well, and your story is so amazing, because
you
were a state's attorney for about 23 years?
Yes, correct. I was a lawyer for about, well, first of all, I'd like to start off with going to high school with you and your sister.
Yes.
But we didn't know each other because we were a couple of years apart.
Right.
But yeah, I went to Loyola Law School here in Chicago, and then I practiced law for about 10 years. But I'll be honest, I really hated it. I did not like being a lawyer at all. And I knew that I wanted to do something else, and I had gotten involved in a couple of things, you know, on my own time, helping a friend of mine run for office many years ago. But I loved it, and I saw that when I love something, the passion really, that's what you need if you can have that. And for some people, it's a luxury to be able to have a passion about what they work. But I saw that that's what I really needed, and so after 10 years, I was lucky enough to be able to join the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Jack O'Malley was still the state's attorney at the time, so that's how long ago it was. And that was 23, that, well, now it was probably 25 years ago.
Right.
But when I left the state's attorney's office, you're right, I had been a prosecutor for about 23 years, and that was where we met. And I remember watching you walk past me And I said, you have to be related to Mary Fralick, because I knew you weren't Mary, but I also saw such a resemblance.
Yes.
That I was like, you have to be related to Mary. Anyway, it's funny. But I remember meeting you.
Well, I remember meeting you, and I also remember watching you. You were an amazing gangs prosecutor. And,
oh, thank you.
You know, you just forged through on, you know, no case was too small for you, and you forged through on those gang cases, and you really, we were blessed to have you as a prosecutor.
Thank you. Well, you're very kind. I do believe that if you have a job you can have passion for, you're so lucky, because that is a luxury. Maybe it was a good idea that I forgot to get married and have kids. I forgot to do that. But the upside of that was that I didn't have to do a job I didn't want to do, because I had anybody to support. And so I was very lucky to work with some of the finest people like yourself, and all the people that we work together with, and on behalf of victims of crime, and with the police officers, and trying to keep the city and county safe. And I was so lucky to have a job that had so much honor and opportunity.
We were blessed, weren't we, Karen?
Absolutely.
Now, tell us about how you got into writing telenovelas. First of all, tell our listeners, what is a telenovela?
Yes. So a telenovela, it's a Spanish word, obviously, and the English translation literally would be like TV, you know, story. But a telenovela are the Spanish dramas that are on at night, on, like in Chicago, they're on Telemundo and Univision. And they're like from 7 to 8, and then 8 to 9, and 9 to 10. And they really were created in Latin America. I mean, they first started as radio stories, and all they were stories. Like, people will say, who don't watch them, they'll say, oh, they're Spanish soap operas. But they're different, and I know they're different because I also love soap operas. But a soap opera, like All My Children, would go on for 100 years, and, you know, there was no real end to the story of a soap opera. Whereas with a telenovela, it's literally a story. It's before there was streaming and limited series, that's what telenovelas were. But when I say limited, they were 120 episodes. They were aired, the story would air one night a week during the week for an hour a night, and they would basically go for 6 months. And there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's very interesting that the first telenovelas, the radio novelas, many of which started in Cuba years ago, they used Shakespeare stories because they're classic stories. And so they took the ideas from various Shakespeare stories but created, you know, a series around it that would be more modern with the things that concerned people of the day. And one of the most popular stories that you will see repeated and repeated and repeated in various forms is from the classic book, The Count of Monte Cristo, because it's all about the wrong, the return, and the revenge. And then, of course, the love that can be till the final episode. You know, the rich girl in love with the poor guy, and the rich girl's mother does everything she can to destroy the relationship for 6 months. And then it ends. But they're fantastic. And yes, people will watch them and think they're corny or they're silly or they can be absurd. And, of course, they have moments like that or else I wouldn't like them. But they also have true moments of emotion. True emotions at the core of the characters, universal issues. And they're fantastic. And so what happened was, one night about 6 years ago, it was winter in Chicago, and we all know how awful that is. And I was just trying to find something to watch on TV. And it was before streaming. You know, Netflix was just when you would sign up to get the DVDs in the mail. It wasn't like, I know there was cable, so you had a lot of stations to pick from, but it wasn't like now. You know, I don't know that I would have gotten hooked on novellas if there were what's on TV now. But anyway, I'm literally scamming through the TV stations, and I hit upon What I know is a telenovela because I was at least familiar with the concept of a telenovela. But I stopped because what caught my eye was that it looked like a baby was in charge of his own kidnapping.
Okay.
Because this baby was like in a baby seat on a table surrounded by these three bad-looking guys who clearly did not belong to the child. And they were staring down at the baby, and somehow Telemundo has some weird off-brand version of the music from, like, The Omen, that horrible da-da-da-da-da. But it's not that music. It's like an off-brand version of that music. But I was like, what is going on? Because the baby would glare up at the kidnappers, and the kidnappers would recoil in horror and fear. And I'm like, what is this? Is this baby in charge of his own kidnapping? So I went back to work the next day, and you know Irma, who was our secretary up at Gangs. And I asked Irma, I'm like, do you watch novellas? And she said, yes. And I said, okay, and this novella, Corazon Valiente, which means brave heart, I said, it looks like a baby is in charge of his kidnapping, and I would like you to tell me if that's true. I didn't know anything about novellas. So Irma says, I'm not watching Corazon Valiente. My mother and I are watching Que Bonito Amor, How Beautiful Is Love, which was a mariachi novella. And her mother was in Texas at this point. Irma was in Chicago, but they would watch it together over the phone. So she wasn't watching Corazon Valiente. Plus, it was a little too violent for her mother. Her mother really liked the old, old-school novellas of no violence, just love and, you know, thwarted love and the love that can never be and all that. So anyway, Irma goes, I can't tell you. I don't know. But Irma said, it's ending in a few weeks, which was my next lesson in novellas, which was that novellas come to an end. I didn't realize they weren't like American soaps that went on. So she explained to me that, no, they run for a limited period and then they end. But then she said, Irma said, what you should watch is what's going to take the place of Corazon Valiente, which is La Patrona, which is like the boss, La Patrona. And La Patrona, and it's a female boss because it ends in A, so that's a Patrona. And I didn't speak any Spanish, by the way. I knew some Italian, but I didn't speak any Spanish. But I said to Irma, do you think that I could learn Spanish? That was sort of originally my goal. Do you think I could learn Spanish from watching a novella? And Irma's like, I don't see why not. You know, and I have relatives, they're all immigrants, most of my family, and they all learned English, depending on how old they are, from either watching All My Children or Friends or SpongeBob, you know, just depending on their age. They watched American shows. So I thought, well, if they could learn English from watching TV, maybe I could learn Spanish from watching a novella. I didn't have subtitles. I had an old tube TV. I don't even know if I could do closed captioning on it. So Irma said, watch the next one, which is La Patrona, which La Patrona is a version of The Count of Monte Cristo. It's its own version, but that was the theme of it, the wrong, the return, the revenge. So Irma said, I'll watch it with you, like, and then I'll help you. We'll talk about it the next day at work, which I have to apologize to the citizens of Cook County right now. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was a taxpayer lawsuit against me, because what would happen is every day I would pretend to give Irma subpoenas to type or something, but then I'd drag her to the water cooler so I could be like, okay, what about Alejandro and Antonia? Or what is going to happen? You know, and now, so what about this town? This town literally had an asylum for the criminally insane. That's what it was called. The asylum for the criminally insane. But nobody was really insane. It was just all people that the rich people, bad people, wanted to get locked up and get out of the way. They were all put in the asylum for the criminally insane. So there was a point that the asylum had more people, or the town, had more people living in the asylum than, like, living in the town, you know. But anyway, so I pretended to do a lot of work, and I made Irma pretend to do a lot of work, but most of my time was spent talking about novellas. And then that ended, and then Irma said, okay, now the next one that is starting is Santa Diabla. And Irma said, I'm not going to watch that because my mother wants to watch something different that was with William Levy. And Irma said, I am not going to watch it, but I want you to watch it, and you report back to me every day on what's happening on the show. You update me. And that was really, I mean, Irma really is the godmother, la madrina, of this whole thing, which is why there's a big character named for her in my script, because by 6 months, I could understand some things, not much. But then when I had to watch Santa Diabla to report back to Irma what was happening every day, what happened was people who sat nearby, at that time it was auto theft, they would listen to these updates, and they thought they were funny. And they liked listening to my updates. Because what I always stress is I didn't speak Spanish, so I was telling people what I thought was happening.
Right.
Which is different from what's happening. And somebody suggested I do like a blog every day about it, and so that's what I did. I called it La Gringa Novelera, which means the white girl who's obsessed with telenovelas, which was what Irma's mother called me. Irma's mother, all the way in Texas, said like I had a natural gift, but it didn't matter that I didn't understand Spanish. I somehow understood what was happening. But I'll tell you how, it was no gift. It's so dramatic between the facial expressions and what everybody's doing. They're really not hard to follow, you know. Anyway, and so I started blogging about it, and that came to the attention of people at Telemundo, and that kind of took off in a sense. And little by little, I began spending more time at Telemundo in, at that time, Hialeah. When I would go to Miami, they put me as a walk-on in a novella, or they named characters after me. When my involvement with the writers became, and then I had an idea for a novella or a script of my own. So when I turned 60, which I can't believe I'm admitting on national radio or international radio or Voice of America, wherever this is going out to, when I turned 60, I was like, you know what? Clearly not getting any younger. It took me a while to figure that part out. But I knew that I could retire from the state's attorney's office at least and start collecting my pension because I was 60, even though it hadn't been 30 years. And I knew I could not live on that pension in Chicago or probably anywhere, you know, any kind of big city in the States. But I thought, but you know what? If I'm careful and not crazy, I could live on that pension in Mexico and I could write full-time.
Well, when we come back from our break, Karen, we're going to hear
more. Sorry.
No, please
so
don't
much.
Apologize. No, you're fabulous. When we come back from our break, we're going to hear about that move to Mexico and about your move from prosecutor to writer.
Okay.
I'm Loretta Freilich on Winds of Change with our guest, Karen Kurbis.
All right, pets, pipe down. I've got something to say to you. Yes, that means you too. Please tell your owners that Father Anthony would like to bless all of you on Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. on the grounds of St. Stanislaus Kostka. And if it rains, under the school portico for the St. Francis of Assisi Blessing of the Animals. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. The Blessing of the Animals, Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. And the goldfish are welcome too.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night, for your safety. We ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available And St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church. And a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
This is Loretta Freilich, and we're back with our guest, Karen Kerbis, who is telling us about her retirement from the state's attorney's office and her move to Mexico to write telenovelas. Karen, tell us about how you made the decision to move to Mexico.
Okay. I'm sorry because I just talk so much, but once somebody winds me up with a question about this, it's like, blah, 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 blah. But it's so exciting to me to talk about, but I don't know.
It's just, so exciting.
I'm sorry. I'm hogging. I'm such a,
no,
I was
no,
a volleyball hog, and now I'm a radio show hog. Thank you. But, I decided that if I was careful, I could live on my pension in Mexico. And at that point, and it's probably still the case now, I could understand a lot of Spanish. I could understand most of what I heard, a lot of what I read. I still sound like Tarzan when I try to speak it because I never really learned it the correct way, in a way that, you know, where you would actually learn to speak correctly. But I certainly can make myself understood. And I moved into from a bigger place to a studio apartment to force me to get rid of things, because that idea of leaving your home and going to a different country and getting rid of everything you own just about or putting it in storage, it's big. It's a big undertaking. So, you know, for once in my life, I didn't wait until the night before it was due, and I actually started working on it ahead of time. But I put a few things in storage. I put my car in storage, and I thought I would try Mexico City first. I would like to add, I had never been to Mexico a day in my life before I decided to do this. And so when I was sitting in the departure lounge over at Aeromexico, I was like, what am I doing? This is the dumbest decision I could have ever made. And I thought of running out and just like faking the whole thing from an airport hotel and going to a Mexican restaurant periodically to act like, look, here I am, lindo Mexico. But I got on the plane, and I did it, and I spent almost a year in Mexico City, and I loved it beyond belief. Now, this was pre-COVID, so it wasn't like, you know, there were any restrictions, and it's the people in Mexico could not be nicer and more welcoming. And one thing that people do in Mexico everywhere you go is they acknowledge you when you walk past them. They say good morning or good afternoon or whatever it is. If you're eating outside and they walk past you, they say provecho, enjoy. There's an acknowledgement of each other in Mexico that, you know, here back in Chicago, when I say hello to people or good morning on the walk every day, most of them look at me like I'm going to ask them for money. You know, they're just... You just don't have that same level of welcoming. The people in Mexico were wonderful, and I loved Mexico City. And I did know people there from writing novellas. I knew some writers lived there, so I had friends there. And then when different actors or friends of mine would come to Mexico, if they came to Mexico City, I'd see them. I loved it. And what I was writing was a script called Olivia, and I was very fortunate through another state's attorney that we worked with, Vicki Cizik. She had introduced me to a television producer that was a friend of hers, a friend of her family's. And he loved my idea, and he was in California, Los Angeles, and I was now in Mexico City, and I was working and writing. And I'm very happy to say that project has really come together. We hope it will be, we expect it to be a limited series. We have a studio. We have a crew, a team assembled, and hopefully we will sell it to a streaming company. But that is what I went down to. I knew that, look, so I was 60. I knew that I could not do that job of being a gangs prosecutor and get the script written, because that job is consuming.
Yes.
I mean, I had very little left at the end of a week to then sit down and work on a script. I know Scott Turow said he wrote Presumed Innocent on the train going to work every day. As it turns out, that was exaggerated. But, you know, it helped him sell the book, so good luck to him. But, you know, there's no, like, right. I mean, it's impossible.
Of course it is.
But anyway, so, but Presumed Innocent is a great book, and I got to meet him, and I told him so. But, so I thought, I've got to just do this. And first I thought I would leave the state's attorney's office, I'd retire, but I would work part-time as a lawyer for an income and then write part-time. But the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, I never lived anywhere more than a block north or south of North Avenue in my whole life. In my whole life, I had never, people have lived all over the world. I never got off North Avenue. So I'm like, I have to do this. This is it. I mean, you know, how much more time do you have to do things? And so, and I'm so glad I didn't wait, because after a year in Mexico City, I went down to try life in the Puerto Vallarta area, because I always thought I wanted to live in a beach town. I thought that would be so cool. Except I really didn't like all that sand everywhere. I'm not the person who should be living in a beach town. I never went to the beach in Chicago. Why did I think I'd love a beach town? So, but I was in that part of the world, in part of Mexico, with plans to try other places in Mexico, Guanajuato, Merida, you know, all sorts of places, Oaxaca. I had a long list of spots to try. But then COVID hit,
and
so I stayed in. I mean, I didn't get it, thank God. But I stayed in Vallarta, where I thought I had less of a chance of catching it, because it's so open, you know, and there weren't a lot of people down there, and I could be outside almost all of the time. And so I spent a year in Puerto Vallarta, and I found a dog. So the dog and I spent a year with these lovely people at an Airbnb in Vallarta. But, you know, it's the jungle. I mean, it's not the jungle, but you're pretty much near the jungle. And so there were crabs that would come into my apartment, and ducks and iguanas. And I'm like, I am living in Marlon Perkins' Wild Adventure, whatever that show is called. I've got to get out of the jungle. It's the hottest place on earth. I should have paid more attention when I thought I wanted to live in Vallarta, how close to the equator I was going to be. But Vallarta is really beautiful, but way too hot in the summer. So then when March came of this year, I'm like, I'm just going to try to go back home, and hopefully, you know, when COVID calms down, I will get back to Mexico. But right now, it's still a little, in my opinion, risky to travel with COVID still so strong and prevalent.
You know. Now, tell us how a documentary was made about you.
Okay. So the documentary is called ¿Qué haces aquí? ¿Qué haces aquí? Is Spanish for what are you doing here? And that is the first phrase I learned in Spanish, because in a novella, that's what they don't say hello. There is no time wasted with a hello. They want to know right off the top, they're throwing down the gauntlet, what are you doing here? And then the next question is, ¿Qué quieres? What do you want? And so I would always joke that was like the first phrase I learned. So what happened was I had written, and I'm working on the second draft, but I had written a memoir called La Gringa Novelera, Prosecutor by Day, Novelera by Night. And yes, I do believe I'm too young to have written a memoir, but there you have it. But anyway, and so what I would do is I would do readings. There was a bookstore in my neighborhood at the time. Well, it's back now, called City Lit Books. Great bookstore in Logan Square. Definitely people should visit it and support them. But anyway, they would have these open mic nights on Wednesday nights where people could just sign up and read something to the audience that they were working on. And I would do that because I wanted to see what works in this story, what doesn't work, where do I lose people, where are they engaged. And so unlike a jury trial where I could slam on the bench in front of the jury to wake people up, you can't do that because there was no bench. So I would have to really pay attention to what people are, like, what are they responding to. So there was a guy in the audience who was reading something of his own. His name is Robert Rook. He's very talented, very funny. And literally everybody now that I'm involved with is like one-third my age, you know. But he approached me and said that he had studied documentary filmmaking in college, and he actually lived in New York and interned for a very well-known documentarian who made a documentary called Cartel Land about Mexico, which won all sorts of awards. And Rob had worked on that as an intern, and Rob wanted to make a documentary of his own. And for some reason, a middle-aged woman who was a gangs prosecutor who wanted to move to Mexico to write telenovelas was something he thought was worthy of the subject. And so he began, he approached me and asked me if I'd want to do it. And, of course, being a prosecutor, I thought, well, he could also be a stalker and has a great cover story of, I'm filming you. And I thought, my God, what an easy way to stalk somebody. Or maybe me, because I'm so self-centered. But I'm like, no, he just follows me around with the camera all day long. There's nothing weird about that at all, you know. But he was not a stalker. He was a documentary filmmaker. And he began following. He did, you know, he came to open mic readings. And he spent a lot of time. I was now getting ready for the move. This was in March and of the year 2018. I'm sorry, 2019. And I was leaving in June of 2019. And so he spent those last few months with me, you know, different packing things up and talking, of watching telenovelas with me, all sorts of things. And then he came to Mexico City with his wife in December of 2019. To film, like, some of my life in Mexico City. And he did a lot of different versions. He edited a lot of different versions, got a lot of feedback. This is the version that's showing tonight at the Music Box, which is, it's like 35 minutes long. And this is a version he has submitted to film festivals, and it's already been accepted to 3. So I'm so happy for him. And, you know, film festivals are like trade shows, in a sense, and you hope that a distributor sees it and wants to distribute it. And I hope more than anything that happens for Rob, because he put in so much work. I mean, he filmed hundreds of hours, and you know, he's got a clear point of view, and it's 30 minutes, 35 minutes, and that's what happened. And the funniest part, I don't know why, but to me, he drove me to the airport because he wanted to film my goodbye. But he had his dad drive us. So now Rob is like half my age, literally. So his dad is sitting in the front seat and driving us to the airport, and Rob is filming me in the back seat. And I kept calling his dad Mr. Rook, because he's my friend's dad, right? So
sure.
You call him Mr.
Right.
So at some point, Mr. Rook turned around after like 4 of my Mr. Rooks and said, okay, look, I'm younger than you. Stop calling me Mr. Rook. And that was true. Even Rob's dad was younger than me. So, you know, I am glad. I am so glad that I went when I did, because who knew COVID was coming, you know, and getting older. And I don't know if I would have waited. You know, some people,
sure.
You know how it is in the state's attorney's
yes.
office, get your 30 years, get your 30 years.
Right.
But I thought, that's another 7 years.
Right.
I'll be 67 years old. I don't know if I'll feel like moving to Mexico then, if I'll even live there. I mean, who knows? You don't
right.
know what is ahead. So I had to do it. The story was burning inside of me to tell, and I had to do it. So I did it.
Okay. Well, Karen, thank you so much. When we come back from our break, we're going to hear about what is in your future.
Well, okay. Thank you.
All right. This is Loretta Freilich, listener-supported Winds of Change with guest Karen Kurbis.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
When we're in crisis, where do we turn? We turn to our first responders, the people who run to danger to protect us. These days, our first responders do not often receive the acknowledgement they deserve for their bravery and personal sacrifice. On Sunday, October 24th at 10 a.m., St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish celebrates a blue mass recognizing our first responders, including police, fire, and emergency medical personnel. Come and celebrate with us at the blue mass Sunday, October 24th at 10 a.m. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststandschurch.org.
We are
are the students of St. Stan Lakoska Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
This is Loretta Frelick, and I'm back on listener-supported Winds of Change with guest Karen Kurbis. Karen, can you tell us what's up in your future?
Sure. Well, as much as anybody can tell you what's up in their future,
sure.
Because let's face it, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. But I hope that is
not
in the future.
I hope not.
But what the plans are, although my mother had a great saying, we make plans and God laughs.
Right.
But my plans are, so I'm in Chicago back here. I'm not sure if it's temporary or not. This dog found me when I was in Vallarta, and so I brought her back with me. So she kind of limits some of my options in terms of traveling, but the plan is this. So tonight is the premiere of the documentary, and then I'll be appearing with Rob at the various film festivals, that it's at least three film festivals. As for the script, as for the series, I have my fingers crossed that we will start pitching it to streaming companies in for fall, October, November. We've had some interest from some companies already, so we have a great team in place. I am so lucky that I was hooked up with this producer. We have a man who writes telenovelas, Jose Valenzuela. We have another man who's produced movies, and my partner on the script is John Colvany, who, if you at all know the shows, Yellowstone, The Closer, Longmire, he's
sure.
Worked on those shows and produced. Anyway, and now we have another writer on the team. And anyway, so once the team is locked into place and everybody's attached, we take it out to the streaming company. So hopefully the script will sell, the story will sell. I'm hopeful, have my fingers crossed. I am now working, and it's going to sound ridiculous, but I'm working on kind of a one-man show, but it's a one-woman show called If I Lived in a Telenovela. And it's basically me yapping about my journey, like a longer, hopefully better organized, for me, than I've done here, version of my story taken from the book. The book, I'm still working on the book, but John thought, the producer thought that a one-woman show talking about this awfully big adventure might have an appeal. So that's what I'm working on. That's the script I'm working on now. We'll see what happens.
Are you still blogging, Karen?
I am. I am waiting for this new novella to start called Malverde, the patron saint of something, and a new novella starting. But, you know, novellas, it's a funny thing, but in the short time I've been doing this, novellas have really changed, too, because they have to compete with the limited series, the streaming shows. You know, younger
right.
people, they equate novellas with their grandmothers. Oh, my abuela watches telenovelas. So they've had to restructure so that it's hard to find the classic novellas that I like to write about, but I'm hoping Malverde will be one. So I still blog every day under my Facebook page is La Gringa Novelera, and I have an Instagram account, Gringa Novelera, and I'm on Twitter as Gringa Novelera. And I pretty much, once in a while, I say something that's not about a telenovela, But for the most part, 95% of the time, I'm blogging about telenovelas, either old or new. There's an awful lot of material in a great telenovela. I could talk about them forever.
Well, you certainly have had an interesting career, both at the state's attorney's office and as La Gringa Novelera.
And thank you.
I remember being able to sit down and no taxpayer alert here because we were waiting for our cases to be called. And you were telling me stories about being on the red carpet for Telemundo.
Yes.
And tell us about that. That will be in the book, Karen, or the memoir.
That is in the book. Are you kidding? No, okay. That's in the book. Look, I'm already refusing to come out of my trailer. I already think I'm a celebrity. I'm demanding clear liquids and white M&Ms, just like Madonna. I had been writing, about novellas for a couple of years at that point, and I got a call from a publicist from Telemundo in Miami asking me if I would like to come to Miami to cover the red carpet of a novella that was going to be premiering at that night. They would, when a novella, at that time, when a novella started the first night, they would have a big event and do everything they could to get people to watch it, and so they had people blogging about it. So she said, we'll fly you down and put you up in a hotel for a night if you will come down and do this, and we only ask that you live tweet the event, the premiere. And I was like, all right. And if you would have asked me 2 years before to live tweet anything, I would have been like, are you nuts? I remember, and I won't tell you on the air, but I will tell you who it is off the air. I mocked an old boss of ours that nobody liked incessantly because he was live tweeting from something we were at. And I'm like, look at this guy, so full of himself, live tweeting. But here I was. I'm like, yes, I will live tweet. Now, I have to say that when they called me about 3 or 4 days before, and I had to check, I had to go tell, I had a case in front of Judge Sachs that was set for motions. And I'm like, I can't do the motions because I'm going to Miami to cover the red carpet event. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I said, I'll explain later, but trust me, this is very important. My mother, when I told her she was still alive, she actually yesterday was the 5th anniversary of her death, and we miss her terribly.
Yes.
Because she would love this. But my mother was still alive, and when I told her Telemundo was flying me down and paying for me to stay at a hotel to cover this event, she was so skeptical because she thought everything I was doing was nonsense anyway. And so she actually said to me, she goes, you better be careful. I said, be careful of what? She goes, they're going to charge you with fraud. You better. And I said, for what? What is the fraud? And she said, you know what the fraud is. You don't speak Spanish. And I said, guess what? They know that's the fraud too because that's the gimmick. I don't speak Spanish. La Gringa Novelera, it's right in the title. So she was like, no. She was convinced. And in fact, the night before she died, she had called she knew she was determined to die the next day. She was determined. And she called us each in individually to say like a parting goodbye. And I swear to God, her parting goodbye to me was, well, I want to wish you good luck with that, whatever it is you're doing. Good luck. I'm like, could you be a little nicer? But she was very nice. But she just thought the whole thing was a fraud. And so she was, but anyway, Telemundo, I had a driver. They picked me. For once in my life, there was somebody waiting for me at the airport with my name on a sign. I matter. There's my name on a sign.
There you go.
I am somebody. Like Steve Martin and The Jerk when the phone book comes. I am somebody.
Oh,
but
Karen,
anyway,
Karen, you are somebody. You are somebody amazing. And we thank you so much for being with us today. Good luck tonight at your premiere.
Thank you.
And just many blessings on your film festival entries. And we just look forward to hearing more about your one-woman show. And I hope you'll come back and tell us about that when it's set to go.
I would love to. Thank you so much, Loretta. Thank you, listeners, for putting up with me. I'm sorry to swallow all the air in the room. And the documentary is called KSSIQ, and it will be online at some point. So I hope you'll watch it.
Thank you. God bless you, Karen.
Thank you, you too. God bless you, Loretta. Thank you.
I'm Loretta Freilich on Winds of Change, and when we come back, we will have Congressman Dan Lipinski.
All right, pets, pipe down. I've got something to say to you. Yes, that means you too. Please tell your owners that Father Anthony would like to bless all of you on Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. on the grounds of St. Stanislaus Kostka. And if it rains, under the school portico for the St. Francis of Assisi Blessing of the Animals. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. The Blessing of the Animals, Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. And the goldfish are welcome too.
We are the students of St. Stan's Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
When we're in crisis, where do we turn? We turn to our first...
I'm Loretta Freilich. This is Winds of Change, and our next guest is the Honorable Congressman Daniel Lipinski. Good morning, or good afternoon, Congressman. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you, Loretta.
It's always good to have you on the show. You are truly one of my heroes, and... You fought the fight for life for so many, many years. But I really think one of the most courageous things that you did was during the COVID, where they weren't having graduations, that you gave a virtual address, and you called it Choose to be Catholic and Carry Jesus into the Public Square. And, Congressman, I have watched you. You have done that every day, and I cannot tell you what an honor it is to have you on the show today.
I appreciate that. We're all it's what we're all called to do, no matter what what we're doing. Not just public officials, but we're all called to carry Jesus into the public square. And so I'm just happy to do what I can do.
And you do it so well, and you work so hard. In the few minutes that we have, can you just tell us what it's like to be a congressman working on all those bills?
Well, when you're talking about pro-life, you know, having been a Democratic pro-life congressman, it was very, very tough as the party became more and more radicalized against us until it got to a point where a lot of the elites who have a lot of influence in the party say there's no room for a pro-life Democrat anymore. They came after me hard in 2018. The abortion lobby spent over $3 million to try to defeat me and nearly won. In 2020, they came after me again, had five Democratic presidential candidates endorse my opponent, all because of the issue of abortion, and I nearly lost the Democratic primary in 2020.
Well, it's truly our nation's loss that we don't have someone like you at the helm of the 3rd Congressional District in Congress. And I really believe that. I, you know, you were such a voice of reason and such a voice of calling people to be practical. And, you know, the courage that you had to stand up to changing the Hyde Amendment, to always vote no on abortion and anything that allowed for it. You know, we are truly blessed to have had you. And one of the organizations that recognizes your gift is Aid for Women. And Aid for Women, as you know, is a organization that helps women carry their babies to term. So they have a home for them to live in till their baby is born. They teach them how to care for the child. They teach them how to do laundry and checkbooks and all those daily living tasks that can be a challenge when nobody's taught you that. And on September 29th, 2021, a week from this coming Wednesday, you are going to receive the Presidium Vitae Award.
Well, I'm honored to receive that award. I have always been strongly supportive of centers like Aid for Women that help women who are pregnant. I always say that, you know, I think they have a tougher job than I ever had in Congress, because, you know, they are helping women who are in a really, really difficult situation for whatever reason. If
right.
someone is pregnant and maybe even considering abortion, or just they don't know where to turn for help. I mean, these are women at their most vulnerable, and Aid for Women does a fantastic job of helping these women and standing up to Planned Parenthood.
Absolutely.
And the lies of Planned Parenthood. And so it is the toughest vocation, I think, to really be there on the ground helping people in the most difficult time, at their most vulnerable. It's something that I'm so happy Aid for Women has done a great job, does a great job every day on that, and continues to expand and help more women.
Yes, they are having more. They started with one resource center, and I believe they have a second one now. Well, four of them. The Michigan Avenue was always their first, and then they've added four more. And they cover the Chicago area. They're in Cicero, Des Plaines, Flossmoor, Waukegan, and over on Michigan Avenue. They have two homes, Monica's house in Chicago and Heather's house out in Des Plaines. And you're right what you say. There's truly, truly a blessing for these women that are meeting the challenges of carrying a baby to term. And they also have two places, or at least one place, where I know that there is, once they finish the two-year time that they spend at Aid for Women in one of the pregnancy centers, they have places where they can live in community with the women, but also have their own space and no real guidance. They just have, it's a transition place from the home to living on their own. So there's also some other really exciting guests that are going to be joining you. The keynote speaker is Rachel Campos Duffy, the author and Fox News contributor, and I think her greatest accomplishment is being the mother of 10. There's also Most Reverend Jeffrey Grob, the Auxiliary Bishop of Chicago. He will give the invocation. And Sheila Logminas, a radio host and editor of In the Forum podcast. She is going to be the master of ceremonies. Now, what are you doing now, Congressman?
Well, let me first say, it's great to be there with all those other wonderful speakers.
It's an incredible lineup, isn't it?
Yeah, I served in Congress with Rachel's husband, I know him. I know both of them well. So it's going to be a great evening, and I'm hopeful that we can get a lot of people out there to support Aid for Women. This is their big annual fundraiser, and it's just really important to step up, especially in these. In these very tough times,
yes,
it's very important. I am what I'm doing right now. I have a consulting firm, Lipinski Solutions, but I'm also doing a lot of writing. I am working on a book that talks about how Catholics do not fit into either of the two sides that we're all being told. You got to choose one, this side, you got to choose that side, and Catholics don't fit neatly neither. Instead, what we need to do is be Catholic first and show the true way and invite people to that, demonstrate it to them. That's what I tried to do as a member of Congress, so I'm going to talk about that in the book. I'll have an article in America Magazine coming out that sort of outlines the book. I have a piece in the current First Things. So I've been busy writing, speaking. I traveled to, I had 7 events in 5 different cities last week.
Oh, my goodness.
Somehow, all of a sudden, they all happened in the same week. I was National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. I spoke at Hillsdale College also. So just trying to get out and evangelize. That's what I really feel called to do at this point. So that is that's where I'm at.
Well, wow, that is really exciting. Can I ask you, as a confirmation teacher, can I ask you, is your commencement address, is that still available?
Yes, it is. You can find it. I know at danlipinski.com, my website.
Okay.
There's a link to it there. And now that I've said that, I got better go make sure it's still there. I'm pretty certain that it is, but it can be found there. I put a lot of work into that. I used to be a political science professor,
mm-hmm.
and I know how important it is right now to. I know how tough it is for young people today, and I wanted to help encourage them with this commencement address last year, and that's why I'm trying to get out. Now the campuses are open again after the shutdowns for COVID. I'm trying to get out and talk to people wherever I can, but especially to the college students.
Well, I also think, in having read your speech, I also believe that young people today, even as young as confirmation age, they can benefit from the value of someone who rose to what is, you know, super success in being elected to Congress 8 terms. I mean, that alone, you could just sit back and say, hey, I really arrived. But then to take your loss and turn your lemons into lemonade and say, hey, this is what you need to be. Choose to be Catholic and carry Jesus into the public square. And that is truly a soul that's running hard after God. And I just commend you for all the work that you do for pro-life and everything that you're doing now to set the world on fire, especially young people.
Well, thank you, Loretta. And I have to say that I never thought it would be possible to lose an election, but still come out of it. You know,
yes.
I can kid you. It hurts to lose, but I came out of that with so much joy, knowing that I stood up for what is right. People have, people reach out to me immediately and thank me for doing that. And so that's much more important. What the world sees as a loss. We know as Christians how important witness is, and we know what is really important for eternity.
Amen. Amen. And that's a true sign of a Catholic hero, which you are, Congressman. So I hope everybody makes it out to the Aid for Women dinner on September 29th, a week from Wednesday. You can reach out to Aid for Women and get tickets to the event, and we look forward to everyone hearing a true Catholic hero in Congressman Lipinski. Thank you for joining us, Congressman. We look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The